to adjust his shirt cuffs. He seemed to remember the state he was in, jacketless and still soaked, his shirt painted to his chest. He lowered his hands. The man opened his mouth to speak again, but Joan interrupted. "For God's sake, listen to me," she said. The clawing feeling had risen to her throat. Nothing mattered but what Nick was going to do. "You need to listen to me. You need to tell everyone that a human is coming, a human who kills monsters." The man jerked his sleeve from Joan's grip. He straightened his own cuffs. "Get this mad bitch out of my way," he said to Aaron evenly. "Aaron, tell him," Joan said. But to her shock, Aaron took her shoulder and pulled her firmly aside so the man could pass. Joan was vaguely aware of Aaron corralling her up a short staircase. "What are you doing?" she demanded. "Let go of me! We have to go after him! We have to go back down there!" And then they were in a suite with big windows looking out onto the stormy street. Aaron slammed the door behind them, and Joan rounded on him. "You didn't even help me," she said. "Why did you drag me away? We have to warn him." "It doesn't work like that," Aaron said. "Of course it works like that," Joan said. "If we warn people, they can stop Nick. Everything will go back to how it was. We won't even have stolen that time. Everything will be undone." "God, you are so fucking—" Aaron's voice went hoarse. "So fucking raw. We can't change what happened, Joan." "What are you talking about?" "The timeline protects itself," Aaron said. "It corrects itself. What does that even mean?" "Those letters you sent will be lost or misdelivered. Victor will ignore what you said, no matter what you do or who you tell, that massacre will happen." Joan shook her head. "No," she said. "No, you're wrong. You can't stop your family from dying," Aaron said. "You just can't. You're wrong. You're wrong." Joan barely knew what she was saying. She felt as though she were choking. "You didn't even talk to that man downstairs. You could have convinced him." "Can't you feel I'm telling the truth?" Aaron said. "You must be able to feel it. The resistance of the timeline. It's all around us." Joan couldn't feel anything. "We came here to help them," she said. "That's the whole reason we came back."
"That's the reason you came back."
"What are you talking about?" Joan demanded. "What are you—" But their conversations were coming back to her. Aaron had never said that he'd help her undo the massacre, she realized slowly. It was Joan who'd talked about saving their families. She stared at him. "No."
"We had to run," Aaron said. "If we'd stayed there, we'd have died. Would you have left just to flee?"
"I don't believe you," she whispered. She couldn't. "We have to undo it. We stole so much time. More than 60 years of human life between them. We have to undo it together."
"Well, we can't," Aaron said, "because it doesn't work like that." And the words were cold, but he sounded as upset as Joan felt. He turned and stalked to the bedroom, slamming the door behind him. Joan stared out of the window onto the monster street below. Rain was still pouring down. The cobblestones were shiny and black. Aaron had to be wrong. He had to be. This couldn't be how it was. Joan's family dead. Those people in the pit. Joan couldn't really have shortened their lives. Through the window, movement caught her eye. Across the street, the post office door was opening. A man stepped out into the rain carrying a sack of mail. Joan's breath stopped. The man hefted the bag, clearly struggling with it in the wet. Then he took a step and vanished, bag and all. "Now," Joan thought. She knelt on the window seat, trying to get a better look. "Now." Aaron had been wrong. Those letters would be delivered, and it would be all over now. 5 seconds passed. 10 seconds. Joan was still kneeling on the window seat in her wet clothes. 20 seconds. There was something on the ground where the man had been standing. Joan pressed closer to the window, trying to see through the streaming rain. There were two things, two white envelopes. "You must be able to feel it," Aaron had said. "The resistance of the timeline, it's all around us." Now, in the back of Joan's mind, the word resistance snagged. With the same sense with which she'd felt the yearning of time travel, she could feel something in the world. Aaron had made it sound like a natural force, a resistance. But Joan's sense of it was more like a great beast stirring, something that when pushed, would push back. As rain continued to fall, Joan watched the two envelopes slowly take on water. She watched them discolour and distort with the weight of it. Then she watched them fall apart until they were no more than pulp in the gutter. On the street, monsters continued to appear and disappear. They ran from the rain in their top hats and hooped skirts, in their 90s grunge and 80s hair. As Joan watched, Aaron's expression came back to her. She remembered how he'd looked at her as they'd stood in the rain, with that awful, old, weary expression. "Joan," Aaron whispered in her ear. Joan startled awake. It took her a second to get her bearings. She hadn't even realised she was falling asleep. She was curled up on the window seat. There was a blanket over her now. It was night outside. The only light in the room was the jumping colours of a television. "What's that noise?" Aaron whispered. Joan tried to gather her thoughts. She was disoriented and confused. Something was playing on the TV. Music. Totoro? "No, I mean, yes, but..." Aaron stalked away and pressed a button on the remote. The music continued. Aaron mashed at the remote. "Oh!" He bent down and wrenched the plug from the back of the television. The room was suddenly silent and dark. And then Joan heard it too. A click, click, click of someone picking a lock. In the moonlight, the doorknob bobbled. And then Joan was awake. She was very awake. She scrambled up, pointing at the wobbling doorknob. Aaron's eyes widened in understanding. There was a heavy vase by the door. Joan lifted it, tensed and ready. Aaron picked up a cushion from the sofa and positioned himself on the other side of the door. "What the?" Joan mouthed at him. What was he going to do with a cushion? Smother the intruder? Aaron mimed an, "I don't know." He looked around for something to replace it with, but it was too late. The lock snicked. The door opened. Joan hurled the vase. "Whoa!" The person dodged, and the porcelain smashed against the corridor wall. "Well, hello to you too, Joan." Joan stared at familiar green eyes, a familiar cloud of dark hair. "Ruth?" Chapter 10. "We should probably hug," Ruth said in her wry way. Joan threw herself at her, and then she just lost it for a while. When she finally drew back, she'd left a damp patch on Ruth's shoulder bigger than her whole face. Ruth looked at it and wrinkled her nose. Joan laughed shakily. "Shut up." Ruth examined the room, stopping as she reached Aaron. "Why are you here with an Oliver?" she said to Joan. There was a funny note in her voice. "Oh." Joan found Aaron staring back at Ruth, narrow-eyed as a cat. "Aaron, this is my cousin, Ruth," she said uncomfortably. "Aaron and I escaped together," she said to Ruth. "And you, I thought..." She couldn't say it. She'd seen the knife thrust into Ruth's gut. "I know." Ruth loosened up slightly. "You just went all tragedy over my jacket." Joan felt like she was a kind word from going all tragedy again. She butted her head into Ruth's shoulder. She was alive. "How'd you find us?" Joan managed. "Couple of people owed me." Ruth touched Joan's hair with her fingertips, gently, the way you might touch a painting. "God, look at you.
I heard rumours you'd escaped. I hoped.
You found us so quickly, though.
Quickly? Ruth said, her forehead creased. Joan, I've been searching for you for nearly 2 years.
There was a puckered scar at the base of Ruth's ribcage where she'd been stabbed. Her hair was longer than it had been yesterday, and there were other differences, now that Joan knew to look. She seemed tired, and there was a jadedness in her eyes that hadn't been there before. She'd been in this time long enough to look the part. Black jacket and black jeans, a slash of bright red lipstick.
2 years, Joan said. The crevasse of Ruth's scar was deep. She must have been so close to death.
But how?
We can talk later, Ruth said. Right now, we need to go.
Go, Joan said. From downstairs, voices rose, raucous and drunk. Ruth's eyes flicked to the door. That was different, too. Ruth was usually brazenly confident, but this version of her seemed as watchful as an animal.
Go where? Joan said.
Somewhere with fewer eyes and ears. Get your things.
I don't have things.
Joan let Ruth tug her into the corridor. Ruth put up her arm to bar Aaron from following.
Not you, she said.
Aaron seemed more resigned than surprised.
Goodbye, Joan.
Ruth.
Joan pushed Ruth's arm down.
He has to come with us.
Joan, Ruth shook her head. I know you escaped together, but you don't know the Olivers. They're all ruthless. This one would throw you to the walls if he thought it would please his family to see you torn apart.
But Joan thought about how watchful Ruth seemed.
Why are you worried about eyes and ears? She said. What are you afraid of?
When Ruth didn't answer, she said, If you don't think this place is safe, then he has to come with us.
From downstairs, voices rose again. Ruth flinched, head turning toward the staircase. As Joan turned too, she caught Aaron watching her with the same wary, uncomprehending expression he'd had in the maze, as if he couldn't understand her at all.
Ruth,
Joan said, if we need to go, then let's go. Ruth shook her head again, but she beckoned to both of them.
I'll be keeping my eyes on you, she said to Aaron.
Outside, it was still raining. Old-fashioned street lamps made the cobblestones shine. Joan hadn't really noticed the discomfort of her wet clothes earlier, but now her jeans chafed as she jogged with Ruth down one street and then another. Her t-shirt was cold and tacky. Joan had expected Ruth to take them out of the complex, but to her surprise, Ruth led them to the covered market. Aaron seemed surprised too.
The inn wasn't safe, but this is safe, he said, the words dripping with disdain.
Ruth glared at him.
How long have you been at this? If you know so much, why don't you just fuck off and take care of yourself?
Aaron glared back. He opened his mouth to answer. Joan interjected before he could.
I thought you said we had to be careful of eyes and ears, she said to Ruth.
That made Ruth glance around again with that new wariness she had. She sped up.
Come on, she said, this way.
Ruth took them up a winding iron staircase. Joan looked down onto the market as they climbed. It was a different market at night. The racks of clothes were gone, and there were tarps over the goods tables. In their place, more food stalls had opened. The air was fragrant with onions and sausages, fried spices, fresh doughnuts with hot jam. People sat around on low plastic stools, eating and drinking and talking. It reminded Joan of the food markets in Malaysia. Ruth led them across a landing with a wrought iron balustrade and an open view of the market below. There were gilded features within the black of the balustrade, curling vines and leaves.
I didn't know there was a hotel up here, Aaron said.
There isn't, Ruth said. These are the stall owner's quarters. I found an empty one.
Found? Aaron said. You mean you're squatting?
Ruth slipped a couple of tools from her pocket and picked open the last door on the landing in three deft clicks.
"You're welcome, Your Majesty," she said to him, sweeping her hand toward the open door.
"You hunts," Aaron said, but he stalked into the room.
Joan followed him in. Without lights, she couldn't see much. A semicircular window took up most of the wall overlooking the street. It was divided into hinged panes, stained glass, like the windows at the inn. Joan made out the design, ravens in a leafless tree. Aaron pushed open one of the panes, cutting the tree's branches. Joan craned. The inn was several streets away, not visible from here. She couldn't see much at all through the streaming rain.
"Close that," Ruth said.
She waited for Aaron to do it.
"Lights on," she said, and the room illuminated.
It was a studio flat with its own bathroom, a rumpled bed, partitioned away by a bookshelf. A kitchenette with a breakfast table, a white sofa and matching armchair, a coffee table. The main feature was a carpet, which filled the whole space. The design reminded Joan of a medieval tapestry, except that the colours were more vibrant than anything she'd seen in a museum, bright reds and midnight blues. There were woven images of monstrous creatures attacking humans, people consumed by dragonfire, people with serpents wrapped around them like rope. It occurred to Joan that she'd seen similar portrayals in galleries of humans slaying dragons and other fantastic creatures. Both kinds of images made her stomach squirm. Joan watched Ruth lock the door and check that all the hinged windows were firmly closed. That wasn't like Ruth. She wasn't paranoid like that. Joan looked around. At home, Ruth left stuff lying everywhere, but there was barely any sign of her here. Just a mug and a plate on the breakfast table. Nothing of her own. There was so much that Joan wanted to ask her. How did Bertie and Uncle Gus and Aunt Ada die? And why didn't you ever tell me about monsters? About what monsters really were? But those were family conversations. They couldn't talk like that in front of Aaron. She had other questions too. What's happened to you in the last 2 years? And why do you look like you're still on the run? She chose the one that seemed easiest. What are you afraid of? Ruth pushed a hand through her curls. Wet with rain, they brushed her shoulders.
How long has it been since for you? She asked. Since the attack?
We escaped last night, Joan said. Ruth made a soft, shocked sound.
Last night?
She came over to where Joan was leaning on the back of the sofa. Joan nodded, trying not to get all emotional again. She'd thought that Ruth had died last night. She'd thought that all the hunts were gone. It was hard to let herself believe that Ruth was really here. Ruth poked at Joan's foot with her own. She'd done that all the time when they were little, just to be annoying. This time, though, it was almost unbearably comforting. Joan was so grateful that Ruth was alive. You were overheard saying some things at the inn, Ruth said. Things that aren't safe to talk about. You mean about the massacre? Joan said, and once again Ruth's eyes flicked to the door as if afraid they might be overheard, even here. It was disconcerting. The Ruth she knew was never afraid of anything. But Joan was beginning to understand that this wasn't the Ruth she knew. Not exactly.
Why isn't it safe? Aaron said.
He was leaning against the wall by the door as if he hadn't quite decided whether to stay or go. Ruth didn't answer. The suspicion she seemed to carry with her now was stark on her face.
Oh, I don't trust you either, Poppet, Aaron said. Call me that again, Ruth dared him, and Aaron smiled at her, all teeth.
Joan was dismayed. She'd known that their families loathed each other, but she hadn't expected Ruth and Aaron to be at each other's throats so quickly.
I know who you are, Ruth said to him,
She made it sound like an accusation. Your father is the head of the Oliver family. I know all about you.
Aaron lounged against the wall, a picture of casual arrogance. A lot of people know who I am, his expression said.
You're Edmund Oliver's youngest son, Ruth said. The only Oliver son. You should have been the next head of the Oliver family, but you were removed from the line of succession.
The phrasing was odd. Edmund Oliver's youngest son. The only Oliver son. There was no chance for Joan to ask about it, though, because Aaron was already talking.
Gosh, Aaron said. You do know all about me, and I don't know anything about you. No, that's quite all right, he said, as Ruth's mouth opened. I don't care to know. What do you do that was slimy enough to get disinherited from the Olivers? Ruth said to Aaron. Here I thought your family didn't have any standards.
Stop it, Joan told them. Aaron glared at Ruth. Coming from someone whose family is full of thieves and liars, he said.
Joan had a flash of standing in the guilt room, surrounded by Olivers sneering at her. Stop it, she said. Just stop, both of you.
There must have been something in her voice, because they both blinked at her.
We can't be like this.
Like what? Aaron said. Like Olivers and Hunt in a room together?
Yes. Joan pushed away from the sofa and went to the kitchenette across the room. She filled the kettle. Yesterday, there was a feud between us. Today, there isn't.
Ruth's laugh was bitter.
Joan, it doesn't work like that. Olivers are nasty, sneering, human-hating snakes. You don't know what they're like.
Joan did know.
She glanced at Aaron, but he avoided her eyes. When he spoke, he sounded subdued.
The enmity between our families spans 1,000 years, he said. It's not going to end tonight.
Olivers can't be trusted, Ruth said.
Aaron's voice sharpened.
Hunt can't be trusted, he said. Olivers keep our word. Hunt's a liar. Hunt, stop, Joan said again. Just stop.
The bench was cold against her back. She looked from Ruth to Aaron. They were barely 3 paces apart, neither looking at the other.
You're both still thinking like you did before the massacre, she said, frustrated. But everything's different now. It isn't, Ruth said. God, Ruth, it is. Nick killed our families, both of our families. He didn't care which one we were from. Don't you remember? There were only 2 sides that night, us and him.
Aaron and Ruth just stood there staring at her.
Joan wanted to shake them. Don't you see, she said. The 3 of us might be the only people who survived the massacre. We might be the only ones who know what happened, the only ones who can stop him.
She didn't say the rest. They were the only ones who could save their families. She'd lose it if Aaron argued with her about that right now. There was a long silence. It stretched and stretched. Behind Joan, the kettle bubbled and spat and then switched itself off. From downstairs, she could hear the sounds of the market. People talking, sellers calling. And still, Ruth and Aaron stood there, not looking at each other, not looking at Joan. Joan's heart began to sink. The hatred between their families ran too deep. Then Ruth spoke abruptly.
We weren't the only survivors.
What? Aaron said. There was hope in his voice. But Joan could see how Ruth was gripping the back of the sofa, her knuckles white.
We weren't the only survivors, Ruth said, but you're the only ones I've found alive.
She glanced at the door again, and this time Joan felt a chill start to spread through her.
What do you mean? Aaron said.
Someone is hunting down anyone who escaped, Ruth said.
Someone is silencing anyone who tries to tell the tale of it. You spoke about the massacre in public today. You can't ever do that again.
Joan made tea. The ordinary ritual of it was comforting. Beside her, Ruth reached into the air, taking out food she'd bought at the market. Pies and mushy peas, still piping hot. The Hunt family power. And that was comforting too. At Gran's place, everyone had had stashes of food like that, except Joan, of course. Her Hunt power had faded over the years. As Ruth reached for another pie, Joan found herself suddenly remembering what Gran had said last night. Someday soon, you'll come into a power. Not the Hunt power, another. What had Gran meant by that? But that memory was quickly chased by another memory. Gran's blood seeping all over Joan's hands, Gran's harsh breaths rattling in and out, Joan heard her own breath hitch. Joan, Ruth said, jolting Joan out of it. Yeah. Joan wasn't there, she reminded herself. She was here. Ruth reached back into the air and retrieved a knob of ginger, freshly peeled. Joan blinked at it. For your tea, Ruth said. She dropped it carefully into one of the mugs. I know you like ginger in your tea. Joan took a deep breath and let it out. I'm so happy you're here, she whispered. Ruth didn't quite smile, but for a moment, that new hard look in her eye softened to fondness. I'm glad I found you. Joan brought the teapot and mugs over to the coffee table. Ruth laid out pies. Bacon and egg, she said. Steak and ale, steak and kidney, cheddar and leek. She unloaded tubs of mushy peas too, and chips with gravy. Ruth and Joan squeezed onto the sofa together. Aaron took the armchair. For a little while, they all just sat there looking at the dark window, drinking two hot tea and eating. Aaron drank his tea black and unsweetened. Ruth dropped three sugar cubes into her mug. She hovered her hand over the rising steam. Joan's heart tightened at the familiarity of the gesture. Ruth always did that when she felt cold. Aaron broke the silence first. The attack isn't recorded in the Oliver histories. He lowered his mug to the table, hand shaking a little. Joan remembered what else he'd said. His father's death hadn't matched the records either. This is all wrong, he said. None of this is supposed to be happening. He'd said that last night too. This night is all wrong. It's not just the Oliver records, Ruth said. I've seen other families' records of that night. They all say the same thing. You've seen other families' records? Aaron sounded a little shocked. Listen to what I'm saying, Ruth said. They all say the same thing. Not just the same false events, but recorded with the same words. I've seen it in the Hunt records, the Hathaway records, the Battelle records. This night is all wrong. The families each recorded all the events of history, but Nick's attack wasn't in any of them. There was only one explanation. Someone concealed the attack. You think the records have been tampered with? Joan said. Aaron shook his head. That isn't possible. Only the family archivists record events, and they would never collaborate. I know, Ruth said. Aaron's grey eyes were wide. The family histories must be perfect, because if they're not, doubt would be cast on every recorded event. I know, Ruth said again. If we can't trust the records, then we can't trust anything. Aaron's voice was rising. Any event could be wrong. Any death. There'd be no way to know what's going to happen on any given day. You mean like being human? Joan said. Aaron stared at her. Yes. He sounded taken aback. His eyes were a little wild. It would be as bad as being human. It's not so bad, Joan wanted to tell him. But she could see that he wouldn't be able to hear it. He seemed shaken by the prospect of an unpredictable future. It was the opposite for Joan. The thought of an unchangeable future written in a book was claustrophobic horror. She leaned over to put her mug down. Her wound pulled as she stretched, a fresh reminder that Nick's attack had only been last night for her and Aaron.
"Who's doing this?" she asked Ruth.
Someone was falsifying records. Someone was hunting down survivors.
Who's trying to cover up the attack?
I don't know, Ruth said. Joan remembered the disbelief in Gran's voice last night.
I was supposed to have so much more time to prepare you.
Joan closed her eyes. She remembered how Gran had gasped in pain. She remembered the sound Ruth had made when she'd been stabbed. Her own breath hitched as she pictured that deep, twisting wound under Ruth's ribcage.
I thought you were dead, she whispered to Ruth.
Ruth ducked her head. When I saw you at Holland House that night, her voice cracked, I'd thought you were already dead. All the others were dying or dead when I found them. Bertie, Uncle Gus, Aunt Ada, Gran.
Joan took a long, shuddering breath. You messaged for help, Ruth had told her that night, and I called everyone else.
Ruth must have known what Joan was thinking because she squeezed Joan's hand. You know, it wouldn't have mattered whether you'd sent that message for help or not. The other families were attacked too. He would have found us wherever we were.
Joan squeezed Ruth's hand back. I still wish I'd never sent it, she managed.
I know, Ruth whispered. And I wish I'd been there sooner. When I got there, Uncle Gus and Aunt Ada were already dead. Bertie was barely alive. I tried to call an ambulance, but my phone didn't work. I held his hand.
Joan swallowed around the lump in her throat. God, Bertie. She couldn't believe this had happened. Was going to happen.
How could those humans have known so much about us? Aaron said. How did they find us?
I don't know, Ruth said. You went looking into the records afterward, though, Joan said.
Ruth nodded.
Did you learn any more about the attack?
You mean, did I learn any more about him? Ruth said.
Him. Joan swallowed. She had been trying not to think about Nick directly. Now she felt a flash of anger, followed by pain. It hurt to think about him. She didn't want to think about him. A memory came to her anyway. Not of the night itself, but of before that. Of a morning when she and Nick had arrived at work before anybody else. They'd cleaned the guilt room together. Joan had dusted the picture frames, and Nick had mopped the floor, his shirt sleeves rolled up. The morning sun had been soft and warm, and Joan had thought, if every day were like this, I'd be happy forever. She heard her breath shudder out. Did you learn anything about him?
I never actually saw him, you know, Ruth said. I only heard you talk about him.
Her mouth twisted, sad and wry.
You talked about him so much that summer. I remember I used to tease you about him. God, that was so long ago.
It had been 2 days ago for Joan. He doesn't seem to exist, Ruth said now. I know he was working at Holland House because you said so, but there are no employee records of him. I tried to trace him through security footage near the house. He somehow never appears.
Joan waited for more, but Ruth had stopped. What else? She said.
You're the one who knew him, Joan. Ruth's voice was gentle.
I didn't, Joan whispered. She remembered how it had felt when they'd met. Like she'd known him her whole life. Like she could trust him with her life. She'd just known. But she'd been wrong. She'd never felt so sure and been so wrong. Her throat felt tight.
Last night, she and Nick had sat together under the window in the Holland House library. Nick had touched her cheek and she'd leaned up to kiss him. When the Olivers had attacked, he'd saved her life.
And then he'd stood in front of her and said, "If you ever steal time from a human again, I will kill you myself."
"I haven't learned anything about him," Ruth said. "Not his real name, not who his parents are, not how he came to learn about monsters. I don't know who he is."
Once upon a time, Joan thought, there was a boy who was born to kill monsters. A hero. "Gran used to tell us stories," she said. "Do you remember?"
"Joan."
Ruth was already shaking her head. "About a human boy who was destined to kill monsters."
"Those are just stories," Ruth said. "They're just bedtime stories for children."
Joan looked at Aaron. He was watching her with an expression she couldn't quite read. "That man in the maze," she said to him. "He had a tattoo." She touched the back of her neck. "Here, where a monster would see it if they tried to take time. A warning. You didn't believe that your father was dead until you saw that tattoo, and then you knew." Aaron couldn't seem to take his eyes from hers.
"It was the hero's emblem from the stories," he said. "The wolf."
Joan felt the hairs on the back of her neck rise. That was in the stories Gran had told her too.
"The human hero is a mythical figure," Ruth said. "Like King Arthur, he isn't real."
But Joan could see it in her eyes. She was remembering the same sweltering night that Joan had been remembering. Years ago, Joan and Ruth had fallen sick with a fever and hadn't been able to sleep. Gran had sat up with them all night and told them a story about the hero, one Joan had never heard before. "In the myths," Aaron said now, "the human hero is the end of days. He kills the first monster, unraveling us all so that monsters never exist. We're never born."
"Those are fairy tales," Ruth said.
"Yes," Aaron agreed.
"The timeline can't be changed," Ruth said. "So he can't kill the first monster. He can't stop us from being born."
"No." "Okay," Joan said. "Okay." Ruth had gone so pale that the only colour on her face was the slash of red lipstick. Joan wished again that Gran were here to explain everything in that reassuring, dry way of hers. But Gran wasn't here. Gran had died. And if Joan didn't do something, then Gran would stay dead. Joan wished desperately that she knew what they should do. "What do we know?" she said. "There was an attack by humans. Ruth hasn't found any other survivors. There are false events in the historical records. Is that all?" Ruth hesitated. Her eyes turned unerringly to the door again. "Ruth," Joan said slowly. Maybe she didn't fully know this new Ruth yet, but she knew her Ruth. Her Ruth wouldn't just have been running for 2 years. Her Ruth would have been looking back at her pursuers, trying to work out who they were.
"I don't know anything else," Ruth said. "Not for sure."
"Not for sure," Joan said. In the pause that followed, the building seemed very quiet. The rain was slowing outside, just a patter against the roof now. Joan couldn't even hear the market sellers downstairs.
"I thought I saw something once," Ruth said. "Just after I escaped, after I landed in the 80s.
"My family still lived in Holland House in the 80s, Aaron said.
"Yeah, I know," Ruth said with a tired half-smile. "I was bleeding all over the shop and had to get your stupid window open again, and I knew if I passed out, your family would find me. I almost bled out before I got to the road."
Joan pressed closer to Ruth. Ruth was sort of smiling about it, but she'd been even closer to death than Joan had realised.
"Next thing I know," Ruth said, "I'm in hospital, and the girl in the bed next to mine is telling me to shut up."
She swallowed.
"I'd been babbling about the massacre, annoying everyone in the ward. I didn't know what I was saying."
Ruth had woken up all alone. At least Joan and Aaron had had each other last night.
They wheeled me out for a scan, Ruth said, and that's when I saw her walking in the direction of my room.
Her? Aaron said.
A blonde woman with a long swan neck, Ruth said, walking down the hallway of the hospital ward like she owned it. And there were three men with her, wearing pins with winged lion insignia.
Joan started to ask what that meant and then stopped when she saw that all the colour had drained from Aaron's face.
When they brought me back to my room, Ruth said, the girl in the other bed was gone. They said she must have checked herself out. But I don't think she did.
You saw court guards at the hospital, Aaron said, hushed.
I don't know for sure, Ruth said. I was all drugged up and really out of it. But afterward, every time I followed rumours of survivors, I found whispers of court guards and a blonde woman.
Something creaked on the landing outside. They all jerked their heads to look at the door, as Ruth had been doing all night. A door nearby opened and closed. A lock slid shut. Joan breathed out. She heard Aaron's and Ruth's breaths ease out too.
We should get some rest, Ruth said. Stall owners are going to bed. Best to have our lights on and off on the same schedule as them.
Ruth's watch said it was nearly 4 a.m. Joan didn't know what time it was according to her own body clock. Without much discussion, they'd agreed that Joan and Ruth would share the bed. Aaron would have the sofa. Now Joan lay awake in the dark. She wasn't tired at all. Outside the room, the building creaked and settled. Footsteps sounded occasionally on the landing. Joan listened to Ruth's regular, reassuring breaths. Ruth was here. She was alive. Joan almost didn't dare believe it.
Can't sleep, Ruth whispered.
Joan shook her head and then remembered that Ruth wouldn't be able to see her in the dark.
I thought you were asleep, she whispered back. I couldn't sleep after, Ruth said, soft, for a long, long time. You keep seeing them, don't you?
Joan rolled to face her. I keep walking into that room, she whispered, where I found you. All that blood leading to the sofa, you pressing down on Gran's wound. She hadn't seen the others, but her mind kept conjuring horrors. Bertie, with his throat slit all alone, Uncle Gus and Aunt Ada bleeding out. Ruth pushed Joan's hair from her face. It's not as fresh for me, she whispered, but I remember how I felt. You don't feel it now?
I do. It's just different. Like a scar compared with a fresh wound.
Joan didn't know what to say. She felt hollowed out and so terribly lonely suddenly. For her, it had been last night. For Ruth, it had been years ago.
I miss them, Ruth whispered.
God, so much.
I missed you.
Joan had assumed that Ruth had found Gran at least in this time. Apparently not. She shifted closer so that she could hug Ruth a little clumsily. Joan had barely even begun to miss them yet, she realized. It had only been one night for her, but there'd been so much pain in Ruth's voice. This was the same loss, 2 years apart.
We'll undo it, she whispered into Ruth's shoulder. We'll get them back.
Ruth's breath shuddered out. Did that Oliver boy promise you that? Because if he did...
No, he said it couldn't be done. Is that true?
Ruth was silent.
Try to rest, even if you can't sleep, she said finally. Close your eyes, at least.
The evasion made Joan's stomach twist.
Is it possible to save them? She said. Is it?
Ruth's arms squeezed tighter for a moment, and then she pushed Joan away, gently.
Close your eyes, she said.
You don't have to sleep. Just close your eyes and breathe.
Outside, the rain had finally stopped. Joan breathed in and out. She lay awake, listening to raindrops fall from the roof in long, slow strikes.
Chapter 11. Joan jerked awake, half caught inside her childhood nightmare, the old, old one of the prison with the cold stone floor and the guard outside with heavy shoulders like a mastiff. She lay awake, shivering with it. She could still feel the scratch of straw under her shoulders. The smell of sickness and filth seemed to linger in the air. It was just a dream, she reminded herself, just the one she'd always had. It wasn't real. She was okay. She was here in bed. She opened her eyes, and the memory of what was real hit her like a shockwave. Aaron's voice cut through it, snide and posh. Could I trouble you to pass me a pen? His voice was weirdly grounding. Through the bookshelf partition, Joan glimpsed the surreal image of Ruth and Aaron at the breakfast table, eating toast and drinking tea. There was a frosty tension between them, but evidently they had formed enough of a truce to eat breakfast together. Identification, Aaron said, writing. Someone, probably Ruth, had stolen stationery from the post office. Joan recognized the logo. A tree, half in bare winter branches, half in summer leaves. Money, clothes. Aaron made an irritated noise and scribbled his pen onto the corner of the paper. I can't work like this. I need a spreadsheet. You've only said three things, Ruth said. Surely you can hold three things in your head. I cannot believe I'm here with you, Aaron told her. I wish I were anywhere but here. I wish I were at home with a good book. Joan dragged herself out of bed. She rubbed her eyes and stumbled around the bookshelf. Hey, she mumbled. They both looked up at her. You look like death, Aaron said. Yeah, well, you look... Joan waved her hand sleepily. You haven't combed your hair. Aaron pressed his hand to his chest, feigning a wound, and then went back to writing his list. In the bathroom mirror, Joan did look like death, grey-skinned and glassy-eyed. She splashed cold water on her face and came up looking like death with a wet face. The nightmare was still half there. As always, it felt more physical than a normal dream. Joan's stomach ached with remembered hunger. Her skin crawled with the desperate urge to escape. She squeezed the edges of the sink and took a deep breath. She wasn't there. She was here. Ruth was here. Aaron. They had escaped. They'd all survived. And as long as they'd survived, they could do more. Back in the main room, there was a third cup of tea on the table and a slice of buttered toast. Thanks, Jane said gratefully. She slid into the spare chair. So I've been thinking, she said, about changing what happened.
We talked about this, Aaron said.
He wrote down travel cards. He had old-fashioned, looping handwriting, like someone's great-grandmother. No, we didn't, Joan said. You said it couldn't be done, but I don't believe that.
Oh, you don't believe it, Aaron said. Wonderful, we're all saved.
I've been thinking about it all night, Joan said. Monsters must change things all the time, just by travelling.
Do you really not have a computer? Aaron asked Ruth.
Yesterday, we walked around in this time, Joan said, undeterred. We talked to people. We affected traffic. For all we know, we accidentally prevented someone from meeting their one true love.
Aaron was disgusted enough to stop writing. Their one true love.
Think about it, Joan said. We walked around a lot yesterday. What if one of the times we crossed the road, we held up a car?
What if some guy in that car was supposed to meet his future partner that day? Only we pressed the button at the lights. Now he arrives 2 minutes later than he would have. He never crosses paths with the partner. They never meet.
You were talking about the small fluxes of the timeline, Ruth said. Those changes are meaningless. The timeline smooths them over. It's like...
She leaned over and blew across her mug. The tea in it shivered and then stilled.
It's just like that. We change things, and then the timeline restores itself. Whatever monsters do, the timeline keeps its basic shape. Important events stay the same.
In your true love scenario, Aaron said, the timeline would make sure that the partner was delayed too. They'd still meet, and nothing important would change.
Joan couldn't deny that there was a resistance about the world. She remembered those two envelopes falling to the ground yesterday. She remembered the feeling of the timeline stirring in response to her attempts to change it. But if the timeline had to resist, then surely there were times when it failed.
Are you telling me you've never heard the smallest rumour? She persisted. You've never heard any stories about events being changed, not ever.
Never, Aaron said.
I don't believe you, Joan said.
Do you know what infants do? Aaron said. They drop things over and over and over because they have to test the physical properties of the world to understand it. You think I'm an infant?
No, Aaron said.
I think you're in denial about your family's deaths. You don't want to believe they're dead. You're desperate for any possible way to bring them back.
Joan couldn't understand him at all.
They're not even dead yet, he said. They're not going to die for years and years, and I'm going to stop it.
No, you won't.
How do you know? You haven't even tried. What does it hurt to try?
You. When you realise that you can't, it's going to hurt you, Aaron said.
The words came out in a rush. Then he scowled as if he hadn't meant to say them out loud.
He shoved his chair back. Oh, do whatever you want. I'm going to get myself some proper 90s clothes.
He's hot. Ruth leaned over and took the leftover slice of toast from Aaron's plate.
Who? Aaron? Joan said, startled.
Ruth hated the Olivers, and Aaron wasn't Ruth's type at all. Is that why you're still with him? Ruth said.
Do you like him?
What?
Joan felt herself starting to flush.
Do you?
Ruth wasn't saying it in her usual teasing way.
Because I think he likes you.
Likes me, Joan said.
Why was Ruth talking about Joan liking anyone? The last time Joan had kissed a boy, he'd killed their family.
He despises me.
She brutally cut off the train of thought. It doesn't matter what he thinks of me.
Ruth's sharp expression reminded Joan of Gran's.
He's here. Olivers and Hunts can't stand each other, but he's still here 2 days after you escaped.
I saved his life, Joan said. He thinks he owes me.
He owes you, Ruth said thoughtfully.
Huh. Okay.
She bit into her toast and leaned back in her chair, chewing.
Okay.
Okay, Joan echoed. Now you're fine with it?
Ruth shrugged.
You saved his life. He owes you.
Right, Joan said. And when he didn't owe her anymore, he'd be gone. And that would be that. They'd be out of each other's lives for good.
Someone had opened the windows, and from the light outside, she guessed it to be mid-morning. There was a muggy heaviness to the air. The room smelled of burnt toast and the wet stone aftermath of the storm. Aaron had left his handwritten list on the table. Identification, money, clothes, travel cards, housing, school. That last one gave Joan pause. School. She couldn't imagine going to school in this time. She couldn't imagine actually living here.
He wasn't quite telling you the truth, you know, Ruth said into the silence.
What do you mean?
There are rumours of events being changed.
I'm sure he's heard them.
Joan's breath caught. You didn't tell me that last night.
They're only rumours. I've never heard of anyone doing it for real.
What rumours? Ruth hesitated. Long enough that Joan prompted her. What rumours?
Nothing specific, Ruth said. But people say things about the Liu family power.
Joan thought of something Gran had always said. The Liu's remember.
Yes, Ruth said. But some people say that it goes beyond perfect memory. They say that some of the Liu's remember things that never happened.
The way she said it made Joan shiver. So maybe they're remembering changes in the timeline.
I don't know, Ruth said.
It's possible. We have to talk to them.
They might not be willing, Ruth said. Families don't like to talk about their powers with outsiders.
I want to talk to them.
All right, but... Ruth looked Joan up and down. If you're leaving this way station, you'll need a proper makeover.
What's wrong with this? Joan said.
She was wearing a black t-shirt and jeans. Plenty of people on the street had been wearing t-shirts and jeans.
Everything, Ruth said.
Downstairs at the market, Ruth pushed clothes along a rack. Flick, flick, flick. Two aisles away, Aaron was doing the same thing with a small frown. Ruth pulled out a tartan miniskirt.
This, she said.
She draped the skirt over Joan's arm. Flick, flick. And this.
A baby blue jumper that looked like it had been shrunk in the wash.
Really? Joan said.
And these. A pair of heavy black combat boots. Ruth added a new pair of black stockings to the pile.
The changing booth didn't have a mirror.
Joan buttoned the skirt. It was high-waisted enough to hide her bandage, but the jumper floated above her navel, leaving a long stretch of bare skin.
I think this is a dog vest, she said to Ruth through the curtain.
It's supposed to look like that.
Ruth ducked in and pulled Joan out of the booth. Joan stared at herself in the mirror. It was like she was wearing the sexy Halloween version of her normal clothes.
Ruth uncapped an eyeliner pencil and defined Joan's eyes, heavy at the corners. When she was done, Joan hardly recognized herself.
What was wrong with the t-shirt? Joan asked.
The cut was wrong.
The voice was Aaron's. He came out of his own booth, and his eyes widened as he took in Joan's outfit.
That's...
He seemed uncharacteristically lost for words.
Good.
He himself had transformed into a member of a 90s boy band. Ripped jeans, a bomber jacket, and a little gold earring. He should have looked ridiculous. He did look ridiculous, Joan told herself. Except... Aaron made the whole outfit look thought out and expensive. For the first time in Joan's life, she kind of understood the appeal of a 90s boy band.
Aaron stepped closer to her. Close enough that Joan could feel the warmth of his body as he lowered himself to his knees in front of her. For a moment, she was weirdly tongue-tied.
What are you doing? She managed. Aaron reached up and plucked a pair of scissors from a nearby table. Before Joan could protest, he sliced into her stockings. And then she wasn't tongue-tied anymore.
What the hell are you doing? She said, outraged.
Aaron dropped the scissors and used his fingers to tear the slashes into bigger holes.
That's not bad, Ruth said grudgingly.
What if you'd cut me? Joan said.
Aaron had finished tearing the holes, but he was still kneeling, looking up at her with his cool grey eyes.
I wouldn't have cut you, he said.
Joan wanted to accuse him of deliberately making her look as stupid as he did, but the Joan in the mirror looked unexpectedly good.
Almost as good as Aaron, like they could be in the same band.
It struck Joan suddenly that Aaron had saved her life too. He'd said that he owed her, that he couldn't leave her until he'd repaid her. But he'd saved her life at the pit, and again at St. James's Park.
Surely he'd paid her back twice over. It took Joan a moment to remember what she'd wanted to say to him.
Do you know anything about the Liu family power?
Perfect memory, Aaron said. Everyone knows that.
Yes, but Ruth says that there are rumours of more, rumours that some of them remember events that never happened.
Aaron got to his feet slowly, and then Joan was looking up at him.
I've heard the rumours, he said evenly. Maybe they're remembering events that have changed.
I understand the implication.
If events have been changed before, maybe they can be changed again. Aaron sighed.
I understand the implication.
Ruth and I are going to see them, Joan said.
Ruth shifted beside her, clearing her throat. Joan looked at her questioningly.
I'm not exactly welcome in the Liu houses, Ruth said. I've kind of stolen a few things here and there, and I guess I have a bit of a reputation. They wouldn't let me through the front door.
At Joan's look, she said defensively, they have some nice stuff.
Justification enough, Aaron said, dry. Ruth gave him the finger, but it was half-hearted.
Well, just tell me where they are, Joan said.
No, Aaron said heavily. I'll take you.
Joan looked at him, surprised. He'd been so scathing about the idea, and he didn't look any happier about it now. He was scowling down at his new blue sneakers.
Be careful, Ruth said.
She sounded as though she didn't like the idea of being separated from Joan so soon after they'd found each other. Joan didn't like it either.
You too, Joan said. Be really careful, okay?
Ruth nodded slightly.
Just keep in mind that the Liu's don't involve themselves in petty power plays like some families.
This must have been directed at Aaron because he rolled his eyes.
But every family has their own agenda.
The Ravencroft Market had arcades running through it. Joan hadn't realised how big it was. Aaron led her down one arcade and then another. Each seemed themed. One whole arcade sold weapons of various eras, knives and swords and bows. Another sold spices that Joan had never heard of.
This way, Aaron said.
The next arcade had a door at one end. It opened onto another nondescript human laneway. When Joan shut it behind her, the market sounds of people talking and selling cut off like someone had flicked a switch. No human wandering past would have suspected that a different world lay beyond that black door. Joan touched the brass plaque on the wall beside it. A sea serpent coiled around a sailing ship. The same symbol she'd seen by the door to the inn. Are all monster places?